All right, we're back. This is North Shore Sports Night on a Monday night, and I'm Rick Moore along with Bill. Bill Newell is actually on the road. We're going to talk to him in a minute, along with Tim Kearns and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And Tim, welcome back. How you doing? We ain't been here for a while. You staying warm?
Trying my best. We just was about freezing, so we took the dogs out for a walk, and they were okay.
Yeah, this has been sort of a throwback winter. We haven't had one of these in a while.
No, not this cold for this extended time period. So
right.
But it's why we're in New England.
Ah, yes, indeed. Okay, we're going to go right away over to Bill Newell. I mentioned him earlier because I don't have him on the line yet. We're going to get him. Bill is at the Beverly at Saugus girls basketball game, big game in the Northeastern Conference. And so I'm going to dial him up right now and then get back to Tim here if everything works. So give me a second. Be right with you, Tim. We'll give this a shot and see what happens. All right, here we go. Going over to Saugus right now.
Hello, I'm here.
All right, we have Bill Newell now at Saugus, Beverly at Saugus girls basketball game. Tim, are you here with us? Let me try this one more time.
Yep.
Tim, are you here with us? Hello, Tim. Hello, Bill. Okay, so here we go. We're going to take a break and start all over again. All right, we're back on, here we are. Bill Newell is at at Saugus High School, Beverly at Saugus Girls Basketball. Bill, what's going on?
Rick, I don't know if you're...
Yep, we got you, Bill.
...me or not. You're breaking up. I can barely hear you.
Okay, well, we got you loud and clear on your end, Bill.
Okay, perfect. Let me just give you a quick update. We're in the fourth quarter here, girls basketball game. Saugus hosting Beverly here. And Beverly has just jumped out to an 11-point lead here. Fourth quarter with 4:38 to play, 40-29 our score. That score is not indicative of the game, really, to be quite honest with you. It's been tight from start to finish here. There have been a 9-point lead by Beverly. Saugus has come back, come within one. And these are two solid teams. These are both winning programs right now. Beverly 7-3 on the season, and Saugus 6-2 coming into this game. So two very formidable Northeastern Conference girls basketball teams battling here tonight. But here, right now, Beverly on the road in Saugus with a lead.
All right, Bill, we appreciate it. We'll look forward to your report coming up when you get back to the studio.
All right, sounds good. And, we'll have post-game interviews and all that stuff up there right now. But right now, the away Panthers under Coach Jess Stanchel are in control here, at least temporarily here. And by the way, Saugus, new girls basketball coach this year, Joe Lowe, taking over for Mark Surrender, who retired at the end of the last season. But anyways, great to meet him. And actually, two nice teams going at it head-to-head here tonight. Back to you guys.
Okay, Bill, thank you very much. Appreciate it. That's Bill Newell over in Saugus, and his game report will be up in just a little while right here on the website. Tim, sorry about cutting you off, brother. I hope you're back still.
Yeah, you've got me still here, Rick. Good job.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, you know, one out of ten ain't bad. All right, Coach, we're going to be talking with our usual guys, Mike Grenier and Steve Krause, later on. Topic for tonight, one of the topics for tonight will be I'm talking about sportsmanship, and I've asked the guys to ponder maybe two or three of their favorite sportsmanship moments in sports in whatever capacity. I've got three that I want to mention, and we'll get to that later on. But in the meantime, Tim, I don't know, reflections on what? What are you looking at?
Well, the Celtics are still playing outstanding basketball, entertaining the multitude of fans that follow the team. They lost at home for the first time by 2 points, and I guess it was a controversial call somewhere in the game. I was watching it on and off, and it was that game against Denver was no more than 3 or 4 points every time I was looking at it. And, you know, could that be a potential matchup in the NBA Finals? Well, we're going to have to wait and see on that one. But, boy, it'd be an interesting final, to say the least, to have those two teams go at it for seven games, a seven-game series. The Sox, I don't think anybody cares. You know?
Right.
There hasn't been any news. There's been no acquisition of any top-flight talent to aid this team. So I think anybody who follows the team is, you know, pretty much consigned themselves to looking at another last place finish. And I don't know if Cora really wants to hang around for this kind of personnel roster.
Well, you know what comes to mind is the fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. It's exactly it, and you're right. I mean, everything I read is about AA and AAA personnel. Even in the Globe, they're trying to put a good spin on it, and you know the connection between the Red Sox and the Globe, and it just comes up empty. It's just AA and AAA players.
Yeah, slapping lipstick on a pig doesn't change the fact that it's a pig, you know.
Well, yeah, and they that's right, and they it's not knocking the athletes. It's just the talent pool, and what I find amazing in the Globe is they're writing all these stories about how great the prospects are, and it just cracks me up. This is Boston. You know, this is Major League City. This is champion. This was a champion city, championship city for what, the first 20 years of the century? And you're talking about.
You look at it. You there?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. The guys that they brought in at least had some name recognition. Last couple of years, they just haven't worked out for them. You've brought in Cy Young Award winners, and they haven't worked out. And the couple of hitters that you did bring in, you got rid of them, and it's like, why are you getting rid of power hitters when the biggest thing the team needs is a power hitter? You're letting them walk, and you're not getting anything really back. Even in free agency, you're not making a really serious effort to bring him in. So obviously they just believe that the pink hats will keep coming, the tourists will keep packing Fenway for them, and the name value is only going to work for so long if you keep putting a subpar product out there. Your true local fans, they're the ones where you're going to find the empty seats. That's the problem for the Red Sox. They've got to stop doing things for the pink hats. They've got to start doing things for the diehard fans.
Well, I also wonder if you live up in Portland, Maine or something, and you're used to coming down to watching the Red Sox once a year with your family, I wonder, if those people start to get cut off, because spend $1,000 for a poor product, how long are you going to keep doing that?
Exactly.
All right.
The Bruins chug along. They're on another winning streak, and they're exciting to watch. They're getting great goaltending. They have a blip like everybody else, they're exciting to play. They skate hard. They attack. So it's gonna be fun to see.
Well, it's funny. I listened to one of the radio stations. I won't say which one. I could say both of them. In Boston, the 24-hour sports stations. I listened for about 20 minutes, Tim. I was in the car and just trying to find something to listen to, and I was dumbfounded. It was the last 20 minutes of one of the shows, and I was dumbfounded at the callers and the reaction of the hosts And they, all they were doing, they were just cutting up Joe Mazzulla up one side and down the other because they lost to Denver.
You know, I saw the score and went, oh, that was close. You know, and again, having watched, you know, big chunks of it, it was a tight game. Denver's the defending NBA champion, so you lose by 2 points to them. Is it a measure of where you are? You're 2 points less than them? No. You're in the ballpark. You can play with these guys. You know, one more 3 point and put you up by one. So people like that, I don't pay a whole lot of attention.
They no. See the,
so they go out and they say these outrageously stupid things, you know, and people will call them up and yell at them. I just choose not to listen, Rick.
Yeah.
I just don't go to those stations.
I know.
Unless it's a game on. I don't turn the fun.
I should know better, but I hadn't listened in over a month, and then I was reminded why. That's very quickly. All right, so let's pause here to listen to Mr. Moynihan, and we'll see if I can get Steve Krause on the line without losing you this time. If not, you know the drill. I'll be back. So here we go. Let's take this break. This is North Shore Sports Night, and we will be right back in one form or another.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Okay, we're back now with sports journalist and also news journalist Steve Krause. Steve does double duties many times, probably not as often as he used to, but still doing it. Steve, welcome. I hope and trust you're in good spirits, good health, and staying warm.
Well, I'm in decent spirits. I can't say that in the wintertime I'm ever in good spirits, but I'm about as good as one can expect, you know. It's I got up this morning and the grass was down, it wasn't up, so it's always a good thing.
Okay. All right. I hear you. We're looking at it from the right side. One of the topics we're talking about tonight, we did a scattershot across the spectrum, Tim and I, just a few minutes ago, but I do want to see what your thoughts might be, and then we can go off from there, you and Tim, but I do want to see what your thoughts might be on sportsmanship, because I have my own personal three favorites of sportsmanship. They come at the college level and the pro level. It's kind of a mix, and one has to do with not the athletes themselves at all, but sportsmanship.
I bet you that is, one of them's the same as mine.
I bet it is. So that's why I'm going to hold mine till last. And why don't you start us off, Steve, and then Tim can react, and we'll go from there.
The best example of sportsmanship I ever saw was when the 76ers came into
there it is.
The Garden.
There it is.
The Celtics. And yep. The fans started to chant, beat L.A. You know, that was I thought that was a very nice gesture, even if it was done because, obviously, they hated the Lakers more than they hated the 76ers. But I also think that, you know, under the circumstances, you know, with all that disappointment and everything, just that was pretty good, I thought, you know.
I thought
that was very nice. And, you know, most of the ones that I've seen are, you know, that I really think are good examples of sportsmanship are in the Olympics. Because for whatever reason, you know, these people get to know each other over the course of the 2 weeks. So that when they, whoever wins, usually the opponents end up, you know, you know, there's some pretty good examples. I mean, I remember once seeing, and I can't think of names, but I remember once seeing an Olympian pick up another Olympian track runner that would collapse and help that person across the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that. I've seen that at the marathon a few times too, you know, where somebody sees somebody struggling and they just hang back and make sure that person's doing okay, you know. And, you know, that's those people are as competitive as anybody else's. And so I look at that as a example of sportsmanship. I know it's forced. I know it's a tradition, but nothing gives me more joy, you know, than to see the handshake at the end of the Stanley Cup series.
Right.
And like I say, I know it's something that everybody does, but whoever thought of it was great, and I think that the custom is great. I wish more people would do that, but they don't. The NFL, you know, they have their prayer circle at the end of games, which I think is kind of cool. I also think if you go to any game involving the service academies, the singing of the other team's songs are always really a highlight for me. That's why I love the Army-Navy game so much, because they all sing each other's songs, and it's really nice because those guys, you know, the one last November was a perfect example. That was a war. Yet at the end of the game, they all gathered down that end zone and sang each other's school songs. And I think that's a beautiful example of sportsmanship. Unfortunately, you don't see too much of it in baseball. Most of the time you see faces being made, bats being flipped and things like that. You don't see a lot of it in basketball because it's just a little too much preening in basketball. But I love it in hockey, I love it in football, and I love it everywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Tim?
Did I leave you speechless?
Well, you hit on a couple of areas where I thought of them. And I'm trying to put it in a cricket. It was either the Olympics or the marathon. A father came out of the crowd and grabbed his son, who had collapsed heading towards the finish line, and supported him on, you know, by under his shoulder as they crossed the finish line together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if that was the marathon or was an Olympic distance.
I would say
race.
Probably the marathon, because I don't think a father could get that close to the track in the Olympics with everything that's gone on. They probably had that thing cordoned off in any of its life.
Years ago, that district place, but it always stood out that the father came sprinting out, and his son was, I mean, he was wobbling like a drunken, and he knew he was in trouble. And the father came out and grabbed him and hoisted him up and helped him get across the line. I was just, and that kind of thing brings a tear to your eye.
Yeah, there was an episode in the Boston Marathon about 10 or 15 years ago where a woman had developed some kind of a chemical imbalance inside of her body. And she looked like she was just in spasms all over the place. And she was trying to cross the finish line, and she looked like she had spasms on top of her spasms, but it turned out to be a chemical imbalance. And all the people around her picked her up and helped her across, you know. And I think most of the time for those things, everybody understands what's involved. To do nobody wants to see anybody do that, you know.
Yeah, and Steve, you can maybe help with this one. It was, and again, these probably go back 10 years. It was a baseball player. He hit a home run, and he pulled up lame, heading into second base, and he was struggling. And the infielder for the other team assisted him around the bases to cross home plate.
I don't remember that. No. I remember that actually happened to Tony Conigliaro. He pulled a muscle hitting a home run, and he needed a pinch runner to run it out, which I thought was hilarious. But, no, that one doesn't ring a bell.
Well, what I'm thinking of, guys, and it's absolutely my number one, was the College Softball World Series back in 2014, and it was in Division II. a Western Oregon girl, a woman, pinch hit. She had been injured, and she was their star player. She hit a home run, and she tore her ACL trying to get back to first base. She thought she had missed first base, even though she hit the home run.
Oh, no.
So the captain of the other team, and I think it's Central Washington, the captain was a shortstop, mm-hmm. and she talked to, I think, her second baseman. They had to talk to the umpires to check the rules. And what they did was the two of them carried this woman to second base, let her touch down. They carried her to third base, let her touch down the base, and they carried her home plate. And,
that rings a bell with me somehow, Rick.
It's just incredible. It's I actually have the story here from the Oregonian, but that to me. And Tim, you know, same thing with what you guys have said. That to me, just this was the College World Series, and the captain said, you know, she hit the home run, she deserved it. My God, that's, you just don't see that every day.
No, these athletes know. See, that's what I don't. You know, if you take all of that macho stuff out of it, you know, and just let these players compete as competitors and nothing else. They all seem to know to do the right thing. It's only when the cameras are on them or, you know, there's some pressure on them or something like that that they go into that preening, which I obviously detest. But, you know, I love to see athletes helping out athletes. And I love the Beat LA chant, you know, and I, you know, all of that. I just, you know, it's just nice.
Yep.
Yeah, there's definitely not enough of it in across the sports world. All the crap that you see going on, and all the, you know, the posing and the dissing of each other. You know, it's like, you know, it's a game, boys. You know, remember, it's a game.
Do you guys remember this summer, last summer, or the summer before, Little League World Series? Now we're talking about. And this kid pitcher hit a batter on the helmet.
Yes.
And the batter was fine.
Yes.
The batter went to first base.
Yep.
But the pitcher was just shaking, and he was crying on the mound.
Yes.
And the kid comes over from first base and gave him a hug.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
Yes, yes. Good one.
That stood out to me too.
How about you, Tim? You got any more?
Let's see. No, I don't think Robert Parrish helped Bill Laimbeer up when he knocked him down.
who did Dave Cowens deck when said, "Now that's a foul"? I don't think he did that either.
I don't think Roger Clemens whacked down the first base.
And whacking the person with his shoe.
Milbury.
You don't think Pedro will help Zimmer up, do you?
No. I got one more, and then
go ahead.
Well, I've said it before. It's when Ray Bourque took his number 7 off and gave it to Esposito.
Yeah, that was moving. It was really moving.
I thought that was the coolest thing.
Mm. Yeah, that was good. That was something he didn't have to do. You know, nobody told him he had to do that. Nobody even asked him to do that. He did it on his own.
Yep. What else you got in your sports attic, Steve?
What do I have in my sports attic? Let me see. Getting a little bit irritated with the Buffalo Bills is what's in my sports attic. You know, I've always liked them. They're usually my go-to team if the Patriots aren't playing or they don't win or something. I watch those games every year with anticipation that they're finally going to beat the Chiefs, and son of a gun if they do something stupid and don't beat the Chiefs. You know, this time it was wide right with ducks, you know, and the only thing that kind of makes up for that is that I'm so happy for the Lions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is just absolutely outstanding. And while I don't dislike the 49ers, I really want to see the Lions win next week and get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a tough team not to like. And And I guess the guy you really have to feel good for, because he's kind of exonerated himself, is Goff.
You know, yeah, they threw him in there on a salary dump, wasn't it? Wasn't that the whole idea?
Now he's, even though he lost,
have to feel pretty good for Baker Mayfield too.
Yes.
You know, he had a nice game yesterday. Can't help it if his coach is a dummy and doesn't call his third timeout. What was that all about?
Well, the thing.
Brain freeze.
What's that?
Brain freeze.
Yeah.
Well, I think the thing you have to be happy about, too, or at least I am with Detroit guys, is I'm happy for the fans. Did you see? I mean, they were going crazy. And last week, it's the first time in 32 years that they were even in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They got to feel good for them.
Well, you do, and they've had some close calls. And they just never seem to be able to get over the hump. And, you know, they've lost some strange games. And this was good. I think the coach is a complete loon, but it's okay. Sometimes they do the best jobs, right? So,
and that's all I need to know, you know?
It's going to be really interesting watching that Baltimore-Kansas City game Sunday. That's must-see TV.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Ravens. Much as I've always been an Orioles fan, the Ravens, you know, I don't know, their Super Bowl team with all those guys where they were just thugs. You know, I really hope they beat up on Kansas City.
Just the opposite for me, man. How can you like a team that allowed a murderer to play for them and win Super Bowls with them?
I know. Yeah. That disgusted me.
You're going to root for him. That makes no sense.
I'm rooting for him this week, but I had a hard time liking him for a long time because of what they had done.
I'll never like him, besides which I love Mahomes. Even though I'm a Buffalo fan, I was rooting for the Bills. I love Mahomes, and I could do without the little hand hearts there that... You know, going to choke over that.
In love, Steve. Come on.
Why don't we pause and say we'll see you next time, Steve. I appreciate it as always, and those are good calls. I love them all. And by the way, my the Beat LA thing was my second favorite.
Good.
I was so disappointed.
You said I knew that was.
Yeah,
it, so.
And at the end of the game, you know, I was so disappointed that the Celtics had lost. It was a game seven too, wasn't it?
Yep.
And then to hear the Garden erupt into Beat L.A., and you could see the 76ers or whatever they were. I think it was the Sixers back then.
Yeah.
It just picked them right up. It was so cool.
Well, they didn't know what the heck was going on. Literally, they get booed out of that place.
Right.
And all of a sudden,
yep,
they got one Beat L.A., and it was kind of cool, you know. So Boston has some class. Although, like I said, it was probably a case of hating the Lakers more than liking the 70s.
Absolutely. Although
it's all right with me.
Yeah, of course. All right, Steve, you be well, be good. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, guys. Take care.
All right, thanks, Steve.
Be good.
Bye-bye.
Stay well, Steve.
All right, there we go. And, yeah, those are good calls. And the marathon pickups, too, I forgot about those, where people do help. The competitors help one another out. How do you describe that, Tim? Because it goes against competitive nature in a way. But on the other hand, you know as an athlete what the other athlete is going through, and you can appreciate the effort.
It's when compassion overcomes competition. You know, and you would hope that somebody would give you a hand if you were in their situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
all right.
You know, and sometimes the winning just isn't that important that you can't do something for a fellow competitor.
Exactly, exactly. All right, we'll see what Mike has to say coming up here in a couple of minutes. We'll take our next break. This is MSO News Sports, and this is North Shore Sports Night. Tim Kearns, Bill Newell is headed back to the studio pretty soon here to bring in his report on the Beverly Saugus girls basketball game, that Beverly was comfortably in front late in the game. And we'll be talking with Mike Grenier coming up next about some various things. And you know the Celtic talk will be in there as well. So please stay with us. We shall be back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Okay, we have returned, and we're back now with Mike Grenier, another great sports writer that we've known for a while here. And, Mike, we just batted everything around, but I want to start.
I heard you guys for a little while, sure.
Okay, I do want to start with your sportsmanship anecdotes, but I also obviously want to get to the Celtics because it's been several weeks now since we've talked, and a lot has happened since then. But let's start with your idea of sportsmanship good times that you've witnessed.
Okay. We'll start with one that you guys, it's intended for both of you guys to laugh because it's not really, but I consider it good sportsmanship, and you guys can chuckle over this. It really shouldn't count, Rick. It won't count. My idea of good sportsmanship, Tim and Rick, you'll agree to this. Dan Quinn, coach of the Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl, he allowed the Patriots to come back from a 28-3 deficit. Raiders come back in Super Bowl history. To me, that is fantastic leadership from a Patriots perspective.
Nailed it.
Right? I mean, you know, the funny thing is, Quinn, of course, became the defensive coordinator with the Cowboys, and, you know, they just lost a couple weeks ago in the playoffs. They gave up like 50 points or 40 points or whatever it was, and he's looking around to become a head coach again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm thinking, my goodness, how many bad things does a guy need to do before he loses his coaching job, you know? But a 28-3 coming back by the Patriots, to me, that was great.
All right, I like that one.
Okay, but that's a joking one, a serious one now. And actually, I don't know if you guys added this one around, but I think of my days of covering the Celtics, and Larry Bird in particular, of course, back in the 80s. And I'll never forget, we remember the rivalry, obviously, between the Lakers and the Celtics, and particularly individually, Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. Now, the first instance, I think, of I thought the respect that both of them had was actually in the Final Four when Magic was at Michigan State and they destroyed Indiana State team, which was not nearly as talented, but their respect grew out of that particular battle. And then in the mid-80s, when they were playing in the finals, you know, Magic and Bird would give each other a fist bump at the tap-off, long before the fist bump became like a chic thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, there's a sign of respect. But for me personally, the thing I liked about the sportsmanship, what I at least was considered sportsmanship, was on Larry Bird night, which was in the early 90s after Bird retired.
Oh, yeah.
And Magic came to town, and Bob Costas, the great Bob Costas, hosted these events at the Garden, and it was, you know, all the season ticket holders were there. You know, I was covering the event. A lot of media there. And Magic Johnson, of course, made that dramatic thing where he opened up his suit coat or whatever, and he was wearing a Celtics shirt, jersey. And, of course, Magic spoke so glowingly of Bird and all the battles they had. And, of course, on the court, they wanted to destroy each other. They wanted their teams to win very badly. But yet, they developed that bond. And I just think it was great sportsmanship by both guys over the years, the way they respected each other, the way they acted, the way they respected the game. And just, to me, that was great sportsmanship. Magic, really a tremendous personality, coming to Boston and wearing a Celtics jersey, which must have really upset a lot of Lakers fans, even though he was, it was just a night of celebration for Bird. But to me, that was an instance of good sportsmanship. I mean, what do you think of that one, Tim, Rick?
Oh, I definitely approve of that, and it was a classic moment. I think every Boston Celtics fan saw him, you know, rip open his shirt and show the Celtics 33 jersey. Had to be laughing, you know, yep. Because, I mean, Magic just had that ability to light up whatever environment he was in, and he was laughing. He was enjoying that moment, and you can just see everybody that was in attendance, everybody that was watching that on television, just smiling, grin with him and thinking, wow, that was just one of the coolest things you've ever seen.
Yep.
You know, it would only be Magic who could think of doing something like that.
Right. I agree, and to me, they forged a bond or a respect for each other in college, and it continued throughout their professional years, and then even in their post basketball careers, they've always had that great respect for each other. So there was a lot of sportsmanship involved because obviously those were fierce rivalries in the 1980s, and they played each other in the finals several times, and the Celtics won a couple, and the Lakers won a couple, but yet Bird and Magic found a way to keep that friendship going throughout the years and, you know, to this day, I believe. So, to me, that was an instance of good sportsmanship.
Excellent, excellent. Yep, love it.
Yeah, I just think it speaks to the character of both guys who understood how great the other guy was and the abilities that he possessed and the way that... And they recognized the fact that they saved the NBA when they came into the league in 1980. They saved the league. They changed the NBA. And, you know, and you've got this white guy on the East Coast in Boston. You have this black guy on the West Coast in L.A. I mean, it couldn't have fit any better.
Right, and Charles Barkley is often referred to that, Tim, as you know. He said that both those guys saved the NBA when it needed to be saved.
Yep.
Yeah.
No doubt about that.
Yep. So I got another. Here's another good one, Rick, and I kind of remember this one. This one's much more local, Rick and Tim. There was a girl right out of Topsfield, Abby D'Agostino, who made the U.S. Olympic team. It was actually 8 years ago, 2016 Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro. She was a great runner. She went to Dartmouth, not exactly a hotbed for track, right? But she was such a world class athlete. She made the Olympic team in like the 5,000 meters. So she goes to Rio de Janeiro. And, you know, with obviously high hopes of at least getting even a bronze medal, which would have been a phenomenal accomplishment for a local kid out of Topsfield who went to Mascadomet Regional, by the way. And in one of the heats for the 5,000 meters, she got tangled up with a woman from New Zealand.
Yes.
Named Nikki Hamblin. And both of them fell, okay? And so Abby D'Agostino, our local girl, got up first. But she decided that rather than keep racing, she went over and helped up the New Zealand woman, okay?
Yep.
And then they both finished the race, obviously well behind the rest of the pack. And the Olympic authorities said this was such a great act of sportsmanship on both of them that they allowed them to run in the final, meaning each one of them had a shot at winning a medal. However, in the process of falling down, Abby D'Agostino tore her ACL and MCL, and therefore obviously could not compete in the final. But both women were given like a special award at the end of the Olympic Games. It's called the Fair Play Award. And it's something that they don't do at every Olympic Games, but it was such an extraordinary thing that they did in helping each other that the Olympic authorities wanted that to be recognized. And naturally it was on worldwide TV and all that, but that struck home with me because Abby D'Agostino was a local kid, and our own Jean DePlacido, who passed away just a few months ago, wrote many stories about Abby D'Agostino during her rise to stardom at Dartmouth, and was an extraordinary runner, obviously at Mascanoma Regional. But to me, that's a phenomenal example on the Olympic level of great sportsmanship.
Great story. Great story, Tim.
No?
You can't tell that. And you know, you mentioned that story, and I remember watching that race, and again, Abby getting up and looking back at the other girl, and you know, I can't leave her here, and going back and again helping her up and finishing together. It was. I mean, it, it just made you, you just swell with pride that that was an American kid helping out another world-class athlete.
Right.
You know, forgetting the finish, more concerned about the individual, which is what the Olympics is all about.
Right, right. And you think both of those women, obviously, Tim, had trained long and hard, probably since their high school, undoubtedly since their high school days, for that one shot at doing well in the Olympic Games and going all out in the finals and trying to win a medal, gold, silver, or bronze. And yet they were deprived of that chance. But in the process, you came away respecting both women with, you know, so much because of the way the sportsmanship played out. I mean, and that was spontaneous. Nothing staged about that. One woman helped out another one, and then they both competed. You know, they were both authorized to compete in the final, and Abby D'Agostino, the local girl, couldn't do it because it tore her ACL. But to me, that always stands out as a fantastic example
Absolutely.
Of sportsmanship and the things that we're talking about tonight.
Absolutely. You got one more?
I do. And I don't know if this one's been mentioned, Tim. I was listening to you guys, but I think back, even as a little kid, I remember seeing grainy film of Jesse Owens competing in the 1936 Olympic Games,
mm-hmm.
and this was during Hitler's rise, shortly before World War II, and Hitler was the 1936 Olympics in Berlin was always already a propaganda machine for the Nazi Party and for Hitler, and here's this Jesse Owens, a black American, a great athlete, and there's no way that Hitler wanted him to win any medals, but one of the medals that Jesse Owens was going for was a long jump record, and he was having trouble. He was having trouble with that event in terms of where his launch point was. And a German athlete by the name of Louis Long helped him figure that out, and he qualified for the final. Jesse Owens did, and won the gold medal. And the German guy won the silver medal.
Wow!
And not only that, they walked off the field together, arm in arm, with Louis Long, a German who went on to serve in World War II, with his arm in arm with a black athlete from the United States. And you can imagine what went through Adolf Hitler's mind, given the times that happened. It's incredible that a German athlete would put his arms around a black American athlete, a guy that was already hated by Hitler simply because of his skin color. And so, to me, that was the ultimate act of sportsmanship, and maybe like even a dangerous thing that a German athlete did. I mean, you think of how evil Hitler was, and you think, okay, this guy's life could be in danger just for that simple act of putting his arm around a black man. But you know, they became friends, and I know for a fact that Jesse Owens went to the funeral because this German soldier lost his life, and I know that. For a fact, Jesse Owens eventually went and saw Louis Long's wife and talked to him about the Olympic Games and his life, their friendship that went on post-Olympics into the 1940s. So, to me, that was just an absolutely astounding act of sportsmanship.
Mm. Yeah, I didn't know that. I hadn't read that. I think I remember seeing a film, but I can't remember if I actually saw that. My mind is kind of messed up with that, but you're right, and what a courageous thing for that German athlete to do.
Yes, and you're talking 19th. There is a grainy film that exists on YouTube of them, I believe, arm in arm, walking off the field together after one of the events. And you think about it, by helping Jesse Owens, who was a better athlete, Owens ended up winning the gold, and the German athlete had to settle for the silver medal. So Adolf Hitler wanted the reverse, of course. Of course, he wouldn't have wanted Jesse Owens to finish in the top 10. So it was a courageous thing, and you're right, it was the ultimate courageous act, as well as a phenomenal act of sportsmanship. So that's what I had in mind. You know, those are the ones that
those are great.
Came to me as I thought about it today.
They're all great, and I want to switch over to the Celtics now and get started on that, because I know that you have, I'm sure you have something to say, but Tim and I were talking earlier, and I was telling Tim, I don't listen to sports talk radio very much at all anymore. Today, for some reason, I had my wife's car, so I didn't have my phone is not connected to her speakers, so I couldn't get, you know, my usual stuff. So I put on talk radio, and for the last 20 minutes of this show, while I was driving home, I don't know where I was, Danvers or Beverly, someplace, I was listening incredulously, and I finally had to turn it off, to every single caller dissing Joe Mazzulla because they lost to Denver.
Right, right. You know, that was a tough loss. I mean, anybody's game, really. But I got to say that that particular night, Mike Malone being an experienced coach and Mazzulla not being an experienced coach, Mike Malone did have an answer for both Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum.
Yep.
They ended up shooting a combined 15 for 43. So they did a great job of defending those two guys, right? And then I thought on the final play of the game, 4.9 seconds left, the Celtics didn't have much time. They're down by two. Mazzulla designed the play for Jason Tatum, and the inbounds pass was off, and Jason Tatum kind of ended up taking that off-balance turnaround shot that missed, and the Celtics lost by two. So a loss by 2 points to the reigning champions isn't so bad. And, you know, it tells you the Celtics are right there with the very best teams in the NBA. So, you know, maybe if they played on a Wednesday night instead of a Tuesday night, you know, the Celtics win that game. You know, you just, to me, those teams are so close, the Celtics and the Denver Nuggets, that if anybody's, you throw the ball up there at half court to begin the game, and it's anybody's game, mm-hmm. whether, you know, it's a seven-game series. So, I don't know. I mean, Mazzulla got some criticism for that. Maybe some of it was justified, but I believe the guy in the Globe wrote a column, Gary Washburn, saying that this is how you coach championship teams, and maybe it's a lesson for Mazzulla, and hopefully it is,
mm-hmm.
because maybe Mazzulla will play it differently next time they play, which is the only time they would play, obviously, would be in the NBA Finals, and a lot of teams that would be interfering with both teams' paths to the Finals.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I can understand that he got a lot of heat, but and so on social media these days and on talk show radio, it's just knee-jerk reactions to what happened 5 minutes ago. And there's not much perspective to it, right, Rick?
Well, everybody knows how to coach. So, you know, that's the thing. And that's what I don't understand. I haven't seen anything, and maybe Tim can comment on this too. I've watched pretty much all the games so far, and I haven't seen anything egregious in terms of Mazzulla's coaching. Last year, we complained about the timeouts and so on. Every coach makes at least one mistake in a game, if not more.
No question.
But you can't hang your hat on that and say, okay, this guy's got to go. But I mean, they were saying Mazzulla's got to go. It's like, are you serious? Look at their record.
Right.
Jeez.
Exactly. And you know what? Let's even tonight, right? They're resting. He's resting Porzingis, who actually saved the bacon last night by scoring 32 on a night with both Tatum and Jaylen Brown were way off on offense. Okay, so he's resting Porzingis tonight, almost as a precaution. Because he's been doing this occasionally because he wants Porzingis to be available for the playoffs and to be able to make a deep playoff run. So it's kind of a wise strategy, in my opinion, because he's going to need all hands on deck. So why overuse Porzingis now? And Horford, who didn't play last night because it was back-to-back, you know, Horford's available tonight. Now, here's the thing. You talk about crazy scheduling, and the Dallas Mavericks were playing the Celtics tonight at home in Dallas, had been resting for 4 days at home, waiting for the Celtics, while the Celtics were playing in Houston last night, fly out after the game, and go to Dallas tonight. They're playing back-to-back games, and yet the home team, Dallas, has been sitting around for 4 days. I kind of don't get that scheduling gimmick, or whatever it's called. I'm sure every team must go through it at some point in the season, but that's a head-scratcher to me that you make a team come from the East Coast or from anywhere and go play two games in two nights while the home team tonight has been sitting around for 4 days. It seems patently unfair.
Yeah, they'll go, well, it's what the computer generates, and, you know, we have to get these games in. It's like, well,
yeah.
You know, you can override the computer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If you take it, once you go through the game, you go, oh, boy, this is going to be rough on one team. You know?
Exactly.
And, you know, when they got blown out last week, I went, well, you know, they just played a whole bunch of games in a row. At least two of them went overtime.
Right.
So they had to extend themselves. They had to have one game where they were going to come out and poop in their pants, and the other team was just going to catch them, you know, being in the right frame of mind. And they did, and they got blasted. I was like, okay, you just throw that game away.
Right, exactly. Milwaukee Bucks, and I know Rick was upset about that, the Celtics losing by 30-35, but as I pointed out to him in the text, Rick, you'll remember this, the same night or the night later, the Oklahoma City Thunder won a game by 62 points.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
So it happens to every team, especially when you get these back-to-back situations or a key guy gets injured and he can't play in the second game of back-to-back or whatever, or you play a double overtime and then you have to fly to another city and play. It happens to every team. It doesn't matter if you're the Denver Nuggets, the Celtics, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Knicks, anybody. It's going to happen during the course of an 82-game season. But overall, so far so good. The Celtics have played, you know, like a little more than half their schedule, and they're on a pace to win 64 games. At least at the halfway mark, they were 32-9, which, you know, I don't expect them to win 64 games, but that's how well they've played. So Mazzulla's taking some hits. I don't know why, when you have a 32-9 record at the halfway point. I don't know how you could criticize a guy for that. You know?
Well, one thing I just thought of too, guys, is when he rests players for really good health reasons, good, especially with Horford and Porzingis, because Porzingis has demonstrated he's been pretty fragile over the years, or at least injury prone, maybe not
right.
fragile.
Right.
However, by what they've done with the rotations, it can, if necessary, help in the playoffs because the Celtics know how to win without key guys in the lineup. They've had that experience.
You had to do that, obviously, all year when Horford sits out the second game of a back-to-back, or maybe the front end of a back-to-back. And that means, you know, obviously, Derek White's in there, and then, like, the first guy off the bench at that point now becomes Sam Hauser or Peyton Pritchard. And the third guy would be, I guess now, lately it's been O'Shea Brissett, who hasn't played badly. But I think Pritchard is having a tremendous season for a guy who, a year ago, they were talking about maybe trading him, or he was talking about maybe wanting to go to another team because he didn't feel he was being used as often as he wanted to be used in Boston. But Pritchard has found a role, a niche, a perfect role player who can shoot the three, who somehow comes up with offensive rebounds against guys who are much bigger than him. He's always been a terrific outside shooter, but he seems to be hitting that three much more often this year. And, of course, Hauser is a streaky three-point shooter, but obviously if he hits three or four in a row in the middle of the second quarter, that's going to decide the game as much as, you know, some shots that they hit in the fourth quarter. So he's also been good overall. His percentage is good. So you're right, Rick. The rotation is a great thing to develop during the course of the regular season because you might have to do the same thing in the postseason when guys get in foul trouble or if somebody comes up with a sprained ankle and has to miss a game or two. You want to have a rotation that's worked during the regular season, and the Celtics have developed that so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I like the kid. You know, the more playing time he gets more comfortable against, they were talking about that in the game last night. And one of the things, he's a mini John Havlicek. He never stops running around.
Yeah.
He's always trying to get himself open to get a shot. And what I don't, you know, we're talking about rebounding, Mike, is the way you get a rebound is you go after it.
Yep.
And he's not afraid to win there when guys are all standing around looking at the ball and go and get it.
And yeah, he's surprisingly good.
That helps a lot. If you're going to be that scrappy and you're going to go against the big guys, a lot of times the big guys are all looking to go back and get in three-point shooting positions. You know, he's in there scrapping and fighting for the ball. And he had one in the second half last night where it looked like the ball was going to go the other way, and all of a sudden he comes up, knocks it away, and comes down with it. And it's like, holy Christ, this little guy on the court is controlling the play here.
Yeah. And you know what, Rick and Tim, we should mention a guy who ordinarily, you know, would be considered the ninth or tenth man, who's actually giving him some good minutes, is Luke Kornet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, kind of the awkward, tall, white guy that a lot of people don't think can play. But sometimes you look at the end of the night, he's got like 12 points and 7 rebounds and a couple of assists. He really, I think, is an intelligent player. He doesn't have the physical gifts of some other big men in the league, but he works well within Joe Mazzulla's scheme of things. And he's getting some minutes opportunities, and he's doing well with those minutes opportunities, in my opinion. I think he's just played really well, surprisingly well. I didn't think he would be this much of a factor, but in some games where Porzingis has had to rest and Horford's had to rest, Kornet has stepped in and done a really nice job.
Well, I think
you
that...
Know,
go ahead, Tim.
You know, guys like Kornet, is it most effective when they realize what their role is and what they bring to that role? No, he's not graceful.
Yep.
You know, he's a big body, that the coach told him, give the ball to somebody who can shoot. Unless yep. you're right there, you know, and you can go up on your tippy toes and put it through the net. But he knows his job. His job is to get the ball, get the rebounds, and get it to somebody to get down the court, or get it to somebody to shoot and turn around and get ready to rebound again. And that's what he does. And his offense is he gets off of everybody else's missed offense.
Yeah.
As long as he's in the block down low, scrapping, he's going to get you 8, 10, 12 points a game because he's going to get to pick up those loose balls.
He does. And he's a very intelligent player, too. He seems to find the open spot where, you know, when Jaylen Brown is driving or Tatum is driving or Pritchard, he gets in that open spot where he can take the quick feed and the quick dunk shot. And, you know, that's an easy basket. It's better than trying to shoot a 26-foot three-pointer, you know, and you need those easy baskets during the course of a ball game. And I just think he's fit in very nicely into this offense, and I think his fellow teammates trust him. And he doesn't try to – and, Tim, I think what we're trying to say, too, is that he knows his limitations. You're not going to find Cornette drifting out to beyond the foul line and taking a jump shot from the foul line or from the three-point line. He knows his play is inside and getting those secondary shots or taking a feed from a guy who draws a second defender. And, you know, Derek White has been good at that. I mean, he's been tremendous. I think White, people are talking about him potentially. I hate all-star things and all that stuff. It's all individual. But I think the talk about him being an all-star caliber player is legit this year because he's improved his outside shooting. He's already a tremendous defender. So he's more valuable than he's ever been. I think just Derek White's been having a great year.
Oh, God, yeah. And he's always, you watch him the flow of the game, he always appears to be locked in.
Yes, yeah.
You know, he's always got that look in his face like, okay, I'm in game mode. You know, and I'm staying in game mode. Of course, the team is playing so well, Mike, and your starters are excelling. They could be an all-star team amongst themselves.
Right.
And that confidence is just showing in everybody all the way through the lineup, all the way through the bench, that these guys get out there and they want to show what they can do. And I think that, you know, Missoula's got some playing. Play to your strength. Don't play to your weakness.
Right.
You know,
right.
Don't go through them shots. You know you can't make. You're not going to make. It's going to give the other team an opportunity to go the other way.
Right. Right. And it also makes Jason Tatum, Tim, and Rick, have to feel that he doesn't have to do it all. You know, he does not have to score 30, 35 points a night. And the same thing with Jaylen Brown. He doesn't have to do 26, 28 points because he knows Derek. I mean, let's face it, Porzingis is averaging like 20 points a game. Derek White's up around 15 or 16. So those two big guys, I mean the two big scorers for the Celtics, Jaylen Brown and Tatum, really shouldn't feel compelled to get anywhere from 25 to 35 points per game because they have teammates who can score.
Yeah, and it certainly opens up their game because if they know that the guys they're sharing the floor with are going to work to get open, and they get them the ball, that forces their defender to back off, and now that allows them more room to wiggle.
Yep, yep. But I'll tell you what, Tim, I would love to see a Celtics-Nuggets final because not only would it be the two best teams, I think, who exist in the league, but to see Jokic play an old-school game, you're seeing a guy like, right now, he's sort of like George Mikan of the 1950s, you know, a guy who, an early dominating figure, except on a modern level with many more skills Jokic has. And to see the purity of his game against the Celtics who play a five-man game would be, I think, an extraordinary series. And I think of one play that Jokic made about a week ago. Of course, Rick, we haven't talked like Celtics the last couple of weeks, but I don't know if you guys saw it. Jokic was at the foul line, and he threw a behind-the-head pass. With his back to the basket, he threw the ball behind his head to a cutting teammate, Aaron Gordon, for an easy dunk. And it really actually looked like he had eyes in the back of his head.
He is so fundamentally good that it would be a phenomenal series to have him go against Jason Tatum and Porzingis and the rest of those guys. And, you know, of course, Denver has a lot of talented players as well. But to me, that would be a possibly an epic seven-game series.
Well, let's hope we get there.
Yeah, a long way to go before then because, you know, each team would have to traverse through some tough teams. I mean, obviously the Celtics have, you know, Milwaukee to worry about, Philadelphia. You can never forget about the, you know, Miami Heat. You know, so all those teams would be in the mix. But the Celtics have the talent to at least get there. And, you know, Denver, I think, would have to contest. The Minnesota Timberwolves have been great. Oklahoma City Thunder have been a really tremendous young team. So there's no guarantee, but I think it would be a great final if the Celtics and Denver Nuggets met.
All right, we'll need a Power 5 next week, Mike, and you can do it with teams or players or however you want to do it.
Sure. I mean, yeah, a Power 5 next week, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Good stuff, Mike. Thank you. Stay warm, brother. I appreciate it.
Well, we love the sportsmanship angle tonight, Rick.
Oh, that was fun.
That was a great one, and everybody contributed some really good ones there.
Brought back some good memories. That's cool.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, Mike. Thank you, sir.
Tim, best of luck
Michael.
For the week. Have a good week, both of you.
All right, thanks, Mike. Take care.
Bye for now. Yep.
All right, that's Mike Grenier, who is a sports journalist and a guest on our program most weeks. We really enjoy his expertise. He's our basketball insider. Don't forget, we'll have plenty of scores up on the scoreboard tonight from high school basketball and hockey primarily. Bill Newell working on his post-game stuff from the Beverly Saugus girls basketball game, and that will be posted shortly if it isn't already up there. What's that, Tim?
It is posted.
It is posted already. All right. So, Tim monitoring the site for us. Thank you, sir. There you go. All right. Couple of games tonight. We got the Celtics tonight. We got the Bruins tonight. So, going to be a late night. Tim, any final thoughts?
No, you have to have a first thought before we can have a final one.
Oh, God. I know. I should change that. I don't want to have final thoughts. I want to keep having thoughts. God. Oh, my goodness. All right, Coach. Thanks so much. I'll talk to you later.
All right,
thanks, Tim. Good night.
That's all right, we'll talk to you.
Okay. That's Tim Kearns, our sports analyst and our ambassador of goodwill. Bill Newell, of course, still working on the scoreboard, and the post-game stuff from the Beverly Saugus girls game is already on our site, so check it out. We got plenty more to go tomorrow as well. And every day we have our North Shore Today news magazine, and you got to check that out. Bill Newell puts that together. We have a newscast and all kinds of information from all over the North Shore on a daily basis. Tell everybody about it, will you? Okay, anyway, thank you very much for being with us. Appreciate it. Stay warm. And, of course, be well, be safe, and do the right thing. On behalf of Bill, Tim, Mike, Steve, and myself, bye-bye.